What's up, queens? Welcome to the Female Dating Strategy Podcast, the meanest female-only podcast on the internet. I'm Ro.
And I'm Savannah. And this week, we have a very, very special guest who has kindly agreed to come on the show to be part of our very popular Slice of Life series, where you hear from FDS queens from around the world and from many different backgrounds and situations, imparting their wisdom to you. And today, we are very, very lucky to have Kristen. Hello, Kristen.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
So thank you so much, Kristen, for coming on the show. Would you like to tell our listeners a bit more about yourself and how you came to find FDS?
Yes, I'm really glad that I stumbled upon FDS in the way that I did. So I actually found you guys in the aftermath of a very ugly divorce. And I wanted to add in the specificity surrounding that divorce because I actually think that my situation is more common than what people realize. I was really young, so I fall into the category of people got married young, but I was fortunate enough to get out young as well. I wanted to just share a little bit about that. And I'm just so glad that I found you guys during that time because I have been able to really use some great FDS strategies and that mindset to better my dating life going forward. So I found you guys in my mid-20s, and now that I'm 30, it has just really turned my life around in so many positive ways.
Yeah, we're so glad to hear that, Kristen, especially since you found us in quite a difficult time for yourself as well. You know, we're really, really glad that I'm assuming was through the subreddit, I want to say, could be a source of support to you as well.
Yes.
So we'll come to touch on your divorce a bit later in the episode, but because you mentioned that you found FDS during your divorce, could you touch or tell us a bit about your life growing up? So the sort of, you know, cultural context that you're coming from and how that informed your initial approach to men and dating.
Absolutely. So I kind of have a double whammy going on because I am mixed race and I also live in the South, the southern part of the US. So I have that very conservative southern kind of upbringing and just surrounding and that culture. At the same time, I also have my half of my family. So my mother's side is completely Asian. So they are of that descent. Just for anonymity purposes, I'd like to keep that specificity to myself. But that really had a big impact on me as well, because a lot of Asian cultures, women are expected to be a certain way. And typically that certain way is be submissive, be docile. You know, the good women are quiet. The good women just take care of the family. That's just how it is. And growing up that way, you don't really question it because that's what's all around you. Then when you pair that, you know, with that Southern culture of it is in your best interest to get married really early and have kids really early, like that is your purpose. I think I grew up just really not thinking there were a whole lot of other options for me. Like that's just what it was supposed to be like. So I fell into that pretty quickly, especially given some of the messaging at home, you know, and it really is just so conflicting because I think other people from Asian cultures can identify with that pressure to, you have to be a high achiever, right?
Yeah.
You know, you need to be great academically, you need to get jobs and all of that. But then if you're a woman, though, just throw that out the window once you have a man. It's just so odd to me. I was that kind of kid that I liked school. I liked academics. I tended to do well in school. I enjoyed learning and all of that. So, you know, go to college and everyone around me is just getting their MRS degree, is what they call it in the South, you know. I was just kind of confused. Like, wait, why am I working this hard? I'm confused. So I'm sure other women can relate to that feeling that had similar situations to me.
Definitely the part about like everyone expecting you to give up all of your hopes and dreams for a man. There, I was very much discouraged from pursuing education because they felt like the guy I was dating at the time, the relationship wouldn't work out. Like quite literally multiple people in my community were concerned about that, which is kind of absurd, right? To be like, well, I'm going to spend the next 40 years with this person and then forego my education on the off chance that our marriage works out. Like, that's insane. But that's just truly how people think.
It really is. And that messaging is just so strong. And you don't realize it's not even just in your family unit. It's people that I talk to at school. It's what I see in movies and TV. It's what's just around you. So there wasn't a whole lot of room for me, especially as a young girl and even as a teenager, to question it.
And I find that so strange as well, partly because even though I'm not, you know, from an Asian background, but it's a similar thing in African cultures as well. And just like knowing how much they emphasize and, you know, invest in education, even for women to a certain extent, to then expect them to just, you know, give it all up and become a housewife the minute they meet a guy is just peak misogyny almost, you know?
Right. And it almost makes you question it. You know, as I got older and started to really analyze that kind of thing, it just feels so much like, oh, I was supposed to be a high achiever and pursue all these things so a man would like me, not necessarily to enrich my own life.
And not for your own benefit, yeah. Because you mentioned that you grew up in the South, this could just be a symptom of my just complete lack of knowledge about American culture. But was there a religious element to your upbringing as well?
Sure. So most people around me were some sort of Christian faith, whether it was Catholic or Baptist. Those were the two most common near where I lived. So yeah, engaging in things like church activities and Bible studies and things like that was just the norm around me. And then pair that religious element with just everything else, that definitely had an impact.
It's kind of crazy though, to interject and to color this, like, yes, religion has something to do with it, but a lot of it is just cultural misogyny, because I know a lot of people who would have said the same thing about women need to be doing this, and they haven't been to church since, I don't know, the 80s, maybe. Like, some of these people, like, they're not churchgoers, like, they're not actually religious, they just enjoy the misogyny aspect of keeping women subservient.
Absolutely. I think in this case, it just didn't help very much. And I think in my personal situation, I'm lucky that my parents didn't necessarily push too much of the religion on me. It was actually more just the area that I was in. You know, all of the popular kids at school did youth group and, you know, all those kinds of things. So I felt like I needed to do that to be liked and to have friends. So I fell into that really easily. And that's where I did get even more messaging about what the role of a woman and a wife should be. So I kind of took that with me into my early 20s.
Given, I guess, the cultural context that you came from then, when you finally stepped into the world with men, armed with all this knowledge about how you need to settle down with a man slash screw at any cost, how did that work out for you?
Yeah, personally for me, I ended up clinging to a guy at 16. Everyone around me told me I was being smart by doing that. And it's just baffling to me looking back at it now. You know, what do you know at 16? You really don't.
Yeah, gosh.
Well, that's the point, right? They want you to not know anything because you don't know you're getting a bad deal at that point.
Oh, absolutely. You know, now I can say that it was by design. But at the time, I totally fell for it. And I felt like, wow, I really am lucky that I found this guy already. And we stayed together most of college. And my senior year, we got engaged. So I was barely even 22. I don't think I had even reached my 22nd birthday yet at the time. It was just a whirlwind, and I thought I was on the right track. I thought I was doing, you know, checking the boxes like a good girl does, and I was on my way to being that, when really, now that I know what I know and I can reflect, he definitely just saw me as someone to mold and to make how he wanted.
Was he the same age as you?
He was 2 years older than me.
Okay.
So close enough that there wasn't a creepy age gap, but he knew better.
I mean, I definitely think, like, even though people say when you're that age that, oh, 3 years doesn't matter, because I remember when I had my first boyfriend around the same age that you were, 16, I think he was about 18 or 19. I think when you're that young, especially as a woman, even though it's only 2 or 3 years, it does make a massive difference in terms of, and especially if you end up with a scrote, like, it just, I do think that difference is amplified a lot because they just have a lot more years of experience, especially when it comes to like wearing you down and, you know, being quite shitty towards you as well. I do think it makes a massive difference, but people tend to downplay it as like saying, like, well, it's only 2 years, it's only 3 years. But that particular excuse almost just ignores the fact that, you know, women, especially young girls, they are heavily socialize into being, you know, compliant and agreeable. And that can be really, really dangerous around men, especially if the man is older, I think.
Sure. And I think just to throw in kind of a side topic here to layer onto that, my professional pursuits and things that I was studying in school were related to education and child development and things like that, which I can touch a little on that later, but that's famously not known for being a highly paid career path. So there was even more messaging within my university system that to survive, you just had to find a man.
Oh, wow. Because of your career?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So there was even more pressure of, you know, well, society doesn't, you know, reward the work of women. So if I want my bills paid, I need to find a nice man to do that for. And I think he saw that and knew that that's what I was interested in and knew that's what I wanted to study and pursue. So it was just the perfect storm, really.
Yeah, of course, especially when you talk about that almost being a pipeline of grooming, you know, as we call it, from, I guess, you know, your childhood and then the people around you and then your university. It's almost like there's just this whole system that joins together in quite a symbiotic way.
Yes. I had no room to question it. There was no space to step back and analyze it or think, what do I actually want for myself? It's like someone just rolled the scroll out for me and said, here's your path.
And, you know, during those years, did you ever come across like feminism?
I would say yes, but it was very surface level, if so. So I think back to how I was in college. And if you asked me basic questions like, well, do you support women's rights? I'd be like, yeah, totally. But I don't think I really knew what that meant and all of that. You know, doing life on your own as a woman, especially in the area that I was just not very common. So I think I had my own internalized misogyny that I had to work on and probably still do at times. So it's an unlearning process. Yeah, I would say feminism was definitely brought to my attention, but I don't think I really understood it.
Yeah. So moving on then to, I guess, the actual dynamics of the marriage itself and, you know, being married so young to somebody that you've known since you were 16. Do you want to share a bit more about that experience? You know, what it was like? And I guess that looking back, you know, the red flag, so to speak.
Totally. And to throw another big wrench into the mix there, we got engaged only a couple months after my dad had passed away suddenly. So I had huge trauma. My dad just passed away in an accident my senior year of college. So my whole world was just kind of shaken at that time. And it was almost like he took advantage of that to get us to have that trauma bonding almost. So I think he saw that opportunity and swooped in. But everyone around me thought, wow, like what a hero.
He's a great guy. Yeah.
He's a great guy. He's going to take care of her and her family during this hard time. And he did all of the surface level things, you know, coming to the funeral and helping my mom out while she's on her own for the first time and, you know, helping me with things and all of that, which, you know, you should do. But it was definitely to make him look good. It wasn't out of genuine concern and love for me or my family. It was, look, I'm the good guy.
You know, when you say it like that, do you also think in his mind there was this element of him thinking like, I'm the man now, you know, now that your dad's gone?
Absolutely. And I think he took advantage of that fact. So he definitely was one of those guys that wanted power and control, but did it in those covert ways. Because anyone who met him or knew him, or, you know, interacted with us would say like, oh, he's really nice. He's a nice guy, you know, but he was so smart and so calculated to do things under the table and in really small ways. You know, some guys are just total dicks and assholes, like right out the gate, and you can see them from across the room that they're like that. And he just wasn't that kind of guy. So, oh, he must be a nice guy.
Yeah, sometimes the asshole, it almost like has to tenderize a bit in the slow cooker before you can really taste it with some of these scrotes.
Totally.
Just like an obvious like turd in a slow cooker. It's like slowly marinating and slowly soft cooking until it's fully formed and fully cooked. Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely that situation. So he saw the opportunity and swooped in and took it, and I fell for it. But so did everybody around me.
Because you can't really complain then, can you? I think it was quite a calculating thing to do, because even if you had reservations at that point, it would make you come across as unreasonable if you voiced them, because it would be like, oh, you know, he's helping you out, he's doing his best. Almost like, you know, when women go to Reddit and, you know, say something ridiculous or just outright offensive that their partner's done, and the way Reddit quickly jumps to the guy's defense. I feel like that sort of situation would have played out had you said something.
Right. I think I would have been met with a lot of, well, what are you complaining about? You have everything.
And that's a really, really tough spot to be in, more so that you essentially got married off the back of your dad's funeral. I just found that really quite shocking, really. That must be an awful thing, you know, to have to go through. I mean, but like, I guess at that time, did you have any reservations about him at all?
I mean, if there were, it was so slight, because I really believed, well, this is what my dad would have wanted for me. He would have wanted me to meet the nice guy and do the thing. But again, it's another example of how he probably took advantage of the trauma situation, because had I been maybe in a more stabilized part of my life, maybe I wouldn't have done that.
So moving on then to, I guess, the actual marriage itself. So after the wedding day, you know, now you're married, you've now done, you know, what everybody's asked you to do. But what was the day-to-day like? And I guess, like, when did it start to sink in that the marriage wasn't all it's cracked up to be?
Yeah, so I will say he did very well financially. He had a very high-paying job. He made a great salary. He didn't have a whole lot of debt. So he took on the role of finances. Then after graduating, I was working as a special education teacher. So I worked with elementary students that had special needs, and it just doesn't pay great. I did okay, but not rolling in the dough by any means. So that definitely played a power dynamic that I don't think I really saw until I got out, that he really was making all the big financial decisions. But I was so busy and wrapped up in my work. It's a very draining job. I think I just let it happen. And now looking back, I wish I didn't do any of that. I wish I had kept more of my money separate, because he convinced me to do, you know, let's combine all of our money and let me take care of it. And when I'm going through trauma of losing my dad and I'm starting to work in a career that is very difficult, I was like, yeah, okay, sounds great. I didn't think twice about it. So then also from the outside, everyone's like, well, you have it really great. He's taking care of you financially. Isn't that what a high value man would do? But not when it's paired with financial control or even financial abuse. So for example, I was working in a lower socioeconomic area. My kids tended to not have a lot of basic needs met. So every year around the holidays, they would do those angel tree kind of things where families would write down things that they needed, and then you could anonymously gift them something for their kids. And one of my students, who I loved dearly, he wore shorts all year long, even if it was cold outside, because he didn't have jeans.
Aww.
So I was like, I'll go to Old Navy and get him like a $15 pair of kids' jeans, right? Like, that is not the end of the world. And he got so mad at me for spending money on that. And that was my first kind of red flag, like, whoa, like, not only is this not a lot of money, but this is for something I deeply care about and I feel like is a really good thing to do, and you're gonna act like I'm wasting our money.
Oh, I can just imagine the Reddit post now. If we went to Am I the Asshole, it would be like, oh, it's like financially cheating. You should have told him. He has every right to be upset. He doesn't want you to be taken advantage of. He's looking out for you. You'd be the asshole.
I would be.
You'd be the asshole.
But meanwhile, he could have a BMW in the garage and have the Xbox and have all the bells and whistles he wanted, right? But I couldn't buy this sweet fourth grade child a pair of pants, so he wouldn't be cold. Like, literally, they were $15 at Old Navy. So, yeah, that was my first kind of like, maybe this isn't. But again, when you're stuck in that, you're like, okay, that was just one bad instance. You don't think, let me run away immediately.
Yeah, you sort of write it off, yeah.
Definitely. So as time goes on a little bit, I realize I actually really love my job and I really love what I do, and I wanted to pursue a master's degree. So I found a really great program that would still allow me to work, and I could do classes on nights, weekends, hybrid, online type situation. It was perfect. And I was so excited. It was something I thought a lot about, and I just jumped the gun and I just did it. And we even talked a lot about it, and he convinced me it was good because, you know, it could lead to better things. He said all the right things. He really made it seem like he was so supportive. But then well, that means my time is going to be spent on things like doing Zoom classes, writing papers, going to campus sometimes on weekends. That's where my time had to be spent. And I started to see slowly over time, he started to get upset, jealous, etc., when I was not able to be 24/7 caretaker to him. So I would go to work during the day. Sometimes in the evenings, I'd have to maybe write a paper or whatever. So yeah, I didn't have time to make dinner, or I didn't have time to put away that other load of laundry and whatever. So a lot of times I saved the cleaning for the weekends, and I'd be like, hey, you know, let's do this and this and this on Saturday and Sunday. And it was met with the classic, like, well, I don't want to spend my whole weekends cleaning. Well, maybe if you just did
a bit during the week.
Yeah, if you can just pull your weight Monday through Friday, we wouldn't have to do everything on Saturday and Sunday when I'm more available. Like, you have two hands and you are more than capable of doing it. But he didn't understand that. He really thought that was my role, even though he never explicitly said that, right? But someone doesn't have to explicitly say that.
But they don't have to, especially men. They don't have to say that, you know, like, I'm an MRA, I'm a red pillar. They don't have to say it. They will tell you through their actions all the time. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Gosh. You know, you're now in a situation where you're studying, but he's essentially trying to shift the social contract so you become basically a trad wife, essentially.
Yes. So then enter the conversation about having children. And I think really he knew from very early on of knowing me that I enjoyed children and wanted to work with them professionally.
It's a trap.
Yeah, so I think he immediately thought, like, oh, well, then she's going to be a good mom, like, teach her to stay at home mom pipeline type situation, when I was like, that's not really what I'm looking for. I'm actually interested in this as a profession, but, like, okay, no hate to those who stay home with their kids, but I was so young, I was just not ready for that. And I also knew I really wanted to pursue some higher education, and I just knew I can't work full time and get a degree and take care of a child
and have kids.
Yeah, there's just no way. So he agreed to table the discussion until I graduated, and we did.
Oh, how generous.
Yeah, okay, so I graduate and enter conversation where he's like, you know, he's really wanting to do that and all this stuff, and I'm like, whoa, 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 I literally just graduated. I'm trying to figure out my next career moves. I don't necessarily want to stay here forever. Like, I'm trying to make decisions for myself, and he realized that the moldable girl he married was actually becoming more independent and trying to make decisions for herself. And I really think he didn't like it.
It just sort of makes me cringe a bit when guys are like, you'd make a great mother. I mean, it's meant to be a compliment, but what I think it's become is that they're basically saying that you would make a great mommy bang maid, and, you know, you'll raise the kids and you won't ask me to do anything. I just find it really seedy now. Oh, I just think being on X is just like blackpilled the fuck out of me, actually. So maybe that's just me projecting. But yeah, when a guy says you'll be a great mom, I'm just a bit like, oh gosh, what makes you think that? Especially when a lot of them don't seem to understand what it actually takes to be a mom, because they undervalue the work of like women and mothers so much. So it's like, how will you know what it means to be a good mom if you don't even want to recognize the work it takes to be a mom?
Absolutely. And I also think on top of that too, he would also toss in there wanting to move. And it wasn't that I was against moving, but the places he was suggesting we move to were like halfway across the country. And I was like, look, my mom is a widow now. I'm not ready to just leave her like that at the moment. Also, if we did have kids, I would want her close by. Like, that's not working. Like, and where was this discussion before we got married? You're like throwing this out of left field. And then now I know that was another way to control, right? He wanted to isolate me away from my circle that he saw was actually empowering me. He wanted to remove me from that.
And I think that's such a good point. And I'm really, really glad that you came to this like rationalization for yourself, like Kristen, because I think it's a mistake a lot of people, especially women, now make. I understand the economic pressures of, you know, buying a home and renting them. It's not always possible to do it, you know, where your family are. But I do think if you have a good relationship with your family and friends, the decision to move away from them should not be taken lightly, especially if you are a woman, because like you say, if you have children, it will be your family and friends that will come through for you. And realistically, if you decide to move halfway across the world, you know, it's unlikely that they're going to come out and you know, be able to visit you as often as they would if you were closer to them. And so I do think that's a really, really good rationalization that you came to when you decided not to move, you know, with your ex-husband.
Absolutely. I'm really glad I ended up making that decision. But at that point, I didn't know yet that he was having an affair.
Ooh.
If you're ready for that conversation.
Ooh.
That was the last straw for me, but it was a roller coaster because it didn't happen in the way that I think TV and movies and the internet, whatever, portrays that it happens. I knew that things weren't really great, but I had zero evidence that there was an affair happening. You know, a lot of times these stories start with like, oh, well, I noticed his habits with his phone were different, or he's coming and going late or at different times and he's really distant. Things seemed to be normal. They really did. So I actually had no speculation that there was someone else in the picture. He started traveling more for work. So that's also how he was able to hide it really well. He was able to come home and just turn it off and things were normal and fine. But he was actually sleeping with a coworker during these work trips that were out of town so that I would have no idea. So he actually came clean to me, but in that weird narcissist way, it was to try to make him look better, you know, like look at me being honest kind of situation rather than like, oh, you still did something really shitty. Like he still wanted me to throw him a cookie for being honest.
Gosh. I mean, so you said that that was the straw that broke the camel's back, but I guess, you know, it's like one thing finding out that your husband, who up until this point you had your niggling reservations about, but you weren't entirely sure that this was just his character, or maybe you did, you just decided that actually, yeah, like that this was it. But basically my question is, you know, what was the process between you finding out about the affair and you just deciding to bounce and finding FDS?
So it was definitely hard because, again, going back to the whole culture situation, you know, divorce was a dirty word.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
It wasn't even really in the forefront of my mind to do that. My first initial thought was actually more leaning toward, well, how do we work this out? How do we move on from this? It took me a little while to actually accept the D word in my life, which is just another case of that cultural misogyny surrounding me. I really internalized a lot of things about myself at that time. I thought, what's wrong with me? Right? Like, why am I not enough? Why did he seek out someone else? What am I doing wrong? I had to do so much work to realize that it really was not about me. Obviously, when someone has an affair, it says way more about them than it does about you, right?
100%.
I'm glad that I've been able to talk to other women about that. Like, hey, you know, you could be literally the wife from Satan, and that still doesn't give him the right to go stick his dick in someone else. So he can man up and come to you about the problems instead of chasing it down with someone else. But it took me a little while to get there, I'll admit. I had to do some of that unlearning, that deprogramming, you know, to get there. But once I did get there, I just took a day off work and drove around to different attorneys in the area and I filed.
Slam that paper down. I mean, honestly, I think at that point, there's just no...
Did she do the Nicole dance of victory when she left the courthouse after divorcing Tom Cruise?
Honestly.
Yeah. I realized there wasn't anything left to work on. He was just adamant that, you know, she's who he wanted to be with. And I'm like, all right.
Sometimes the finality of something like a divorce is so freeing because it's better sometimes to just, I don't know, go ahead and shoot that horse rather than trying to keep it alive with like duct tape and whatever have you, you know, smelling salts. It's just sometimes it's just better to go.
Oh, yeah. And I hadn't gone to church in a while and I thought maybe I should try to go back to church. And I went and everyone around me was like, well, let me pray for your husband to come back. And I'm like, I don't want your husband to come back.
You know, how did I know that was going to happen? I was like, the last place you want to go when you get divorces.
That's just like praying for the illness to come back.
Yeah, right? You praying for me to be sick again? What is wrong with you? Trying to ruin my life?
But to be honest, even though it's disappointing that that was the church's response, but there are so many marriages in churches that are literally like hanging by one of Jesus's beard hairs, like, and they just can't bring themselves to separate.
You can tell because they get up every Sunday like, if it were not for the grace of God, I wouldn't be here today. And at some point you want to be like, maybe you should just wrap this relationship up. You know what I mean? Like,
literally. It's actually really, really sad. Just like how many, you know, marriages that are abusive or should have ended years ago in the church that are just still struggling on. And I think a big part of it is that stigma in the church that you shouldn't be getting divorced. Like, divorce, you could just pray the problem away.
The church will excuse literally anything. They always want to, quote, reunite marriages, even if that guy's a rat bastard and does horrible things to you.
Yep.
But here's the thing, though, like, if we're going to take the Bible at face value, right, you know, let's just say, you know, we're at a Christian gathering, right? Even Jesus found cheating so deplorable that he gave that as a legitimate reason for divorce. So it's like, if even Jesus said that, basically been the partner who's cheating, then why are you telling me not to? It's just, I've never understood the church's tolerance for cheating because of that. Like, even Jesus thought it was so whack that you might as well just call it a day. But then you get people in the church saying, yeah, we'll just pray for you to get back together. Stupid!
Yeah, it really is. I was like, what about me? Like, what about the person here in front of you trying to move on with her life? Are you telling me there's nothing else for me besides this scrote? Like, I don't understand. So that really actually helped me. I'm glad I did that because it almost gave me the ick. You know what I'm saying? So I think I have that moment. That really helped me heal when I realized, oh, okay, like, I'm not the crazy one here.
You're in church one day and you're like, oh, wait, these people are crazy. Then you sort of back out slowly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely how it felt. For sure. For sure. You know, even where my workplace at the time, I still felt like I couldn't say a whole lot about my personal life. It's just, I didn't know anyone like me. I didn't know anyone that was 25, 26, already getting a divorce when a lot of people around me hadn't even been married yet. So it felt isolating at times. Kind of felt like I had that scarlet letter on me at times. There were definitely moments where I would cry thinking, well, who's going to want to date me? Like, am I just this used up trash? Again, that internalized misogyny that, like, a woman's worth is her, you know, her purity and all that kind of crap. That was really hard to work through. And I'm not going to say it was quick. It took a while to unlearn some of those thoughts.
It's hard. I mean, even for myself, like, I can identify with you on that level. It's like, because you get so many messages about everything you can do and be wrong as a woman from the time you're very small. It's all in relation to, like, what men want. They never really give you space to even figure out what you want. So then your mind is always clouded with all the things that are wrong with you. It's actually a really huge problem in the way women are socialized, but especially in, like, religious communities.
Definitely. I think there's people who meant well at the time when they were saying things like this to me, but I don't think they realized how it came across when they would try to encourage me, like, oh, well, you're so young, like, you'll find someone else really easily. And I'm like, again, but why is it about finding someone else? Like, why not, like, look at all these other things you can do with your life? Why is it about having to find someone?
Yeah, definitely. And especially when, you know, you were definitely the victim in that situation. But even if you weren't, like, again, there's this also perception that women just, you know part of marriages willy-nilly, even though statistically they are the ones to, you know, to actually file for divorce. But if you look at the actual reasons behind divorce, like, you know, nobody, you know, marries, you know, to get divorced from somebody. So if that does happen, you know, something's seriously gone wrong somewhere in the pipeline. And especially given the messaging that women receive and that we should be constantly forgiving, or that if we get divorced, like you said, that we're seen as, you know, washed up, used up goods. It just doesn't make any sense that a woman would jump in and skip into the courthouse to file the papers, even if that would be warranted. At least that might not be their reaction initially to divorce.
Right, because it goes back to that idea that, you know, successful relationships are the longest lasting ones that stay together forever kind of thing. It's like, that's not really true. There's people that have been together for 50 years, as miserable as I'll get out.
This is kind of a side note, but totally related. Yeah, we have to come up with different metrics for successful relationships, right? Because there's just a lot of, yeah, relationships that are chugging along that maybe should have ended a long time ago. And when you look at other types of, like, acquisitions, mergers, or anything where you see two people come together for a common united goal, like, it's sometimes the length of time doesn't matter so much as, like, the outcome of it, right? But I feel like we have no, like, objective markers of what a good marriage looks like, because if we actually start talking about that, then people would realize a lot of people are in bad marriages. And so I feel like that conversation has been really stifled, especially in the religious community. Like, what does it actually look like when it's successful? Sometimes they kind of skirt over it and say things like, oh, you'll know it by the fruit of the tree. Or, man, it's been so long since I'm in a church, I can't remember all the quotes, but it's something like that, about how that will look like. But so often they just focus on pushing marriages together against all common sense, that, and then just like, you know, spackling over all the problems with like shiny platitudes, right? About like what marriage is like, oh, marriage is hard or marriage is difficult. And I think we just have to, we'll have to do the work of unpacking that and then finding actual real measures like, hey, is this a good relationship? What does that look like?
Absolutely. And sometimes even relationships that end, you know, you can still call them successful if you walked away gaining something from it. So I would say even in my case, it blew up in the way that it did, but I felt success in that because I would not be able to do the things I'm doing now had I not been in that relationship. You know, as much as I wish I could turn back time and change things, I had to go through that to know what I know now. It's one of those kind of situations. And something I forgot to mention too, part of what made me want to file so quickly was because he actually got the other woman pregnant.
And the church folk tried to get you back together with him after that? Wow. That just put a whole other layer of bullshit. Oh man, fuck every single one of those people.
Yeah, Jesus is rolling in his tomb, like legit.
People actually tried to tell me, but children are a blessing and they're a gift from God. And I was like,
no. Oh, no, no, no.
They can be a gift to them, not to me. It's not a gift to me. Like, no.
A gift has to be wanted.
Not them trying to get you to accept your husband's side babies. Like, are you serious? The thing is, I 100% believe you, having grown up in the church. Like, none of this surprises me, but it's still shocking, but it's not shocking, but it is shocking, but it's not shocking, you know?
Yeah. Not that I'm saying it's hurtful, but nothing gives you the ick quicker than seeing your husband's baby registry with another woman. Like, that just really blew my mind.
Yeah, I'm sorry for that. That's such trash.
Yeah, so that helped me move on, though, because I think that really gave some finality to it. Like you said, you know, there was just no way in hell I was going to accept this baby into my life, like, ever. So, okay, bye. And you can't tell me that's an accident, right? You can't say, oh, I made a mistake. Like, that's not a mistake.
The whole human being, yeah.
Yeah, that's a choice you made. You didn't accidentally stick your dick in her and ejaculate in her. Like, that wasn't a mistake. That was a choice. So I hope that also gives any women out there listening, and if there's any women that are either already divorced or contemplating one, in the middle of one, feel like you want to do it, but you're not sure, I want to give that encouragement because there's just so much stigma out there. You know, the world really doesn't want to see you succeed. And I know it's so hard, but I promise you the opportunities on the other side are so much better than anything you can imagine staying with a scroty man.
Amen.
That was quite the roller coaster ending to that marriage, Kristen. So as a newly divorced woman who stumbled across FDS in the wild, what was that process like for you? Almost having, I guess, like a straight talking, you know, female only space, basically exposing men and relationships and I guess to some extent feminism and how it affects dating and, you know, marriage and all our interactions with men. Like, what was that process like? Because at least for me, it wasn't just a case of, yeah, I agree with, you know, what these women were saying. It was actually a process to be like, yeah, these women are right.
Yeah, I would say I was searching for the wrong thing at the time because I was mentally wearing the label of divorcee, you know, and any advice that you find online for divorce typically is for older women with children type thing. And I'm not saying that's not great advice and needed, but there wasn't a whole lot out there for 20 somethings. And it was great to find a space that had all ages of women that were really all helping each other, regardless of where they were in their timeline of their life. So I really applaud you guys for that. I realized too, so much of us had the same questions. So much of us had the same struggle when it came to dating. We were running into men that were displaying the same behaviors. And it's so nice to have that space to just be candid and open about it. That's the power of those female-only spaces, the thing that, you know, they don't want us to have. It really was great. It helped me realize I didn't have to wear that badge. I didn't have to have so much shame. you know, men really are looking for the low value skirty type dudes are looking for something. I didn't understand how to separate that from what an actual high value man looked.
Yeah, that's totally by design, because if I feel like I'm continuously rephrasing this, but it's like, it's so important. And I feel like it's really like the nugget of FDS. It's like they, all of this conditioning we have is to make us exploitable and not be able to hold men accountable for anything. And so it's like, of course, it's so hard to then like to completely change how you feel about yourself and your environment. And it's either like you internalize it when you find it out and feel like, why didn't I know? And why was I like this? Or you just get like explosively angry at the world. I chose the latter, by the way, if anybody could tell. But you're just like, fuck all y'all. I want to destroy it. But it's a totally natural thing. I'll let you guys know what it's like on the other side of that anger at some point when I get there. But like, it's like, but it's such a process. And so it's like finding the compassion for yourself and understanding like, it's not your fault. Like, that's just the way that society was structured for a long time. And now that you have the knowledge, you can now empower yourself to make different decisions. Not, doesn't mean it's easy, but it does mean that like, hey, at least you aren't in your 50s with a couple of kids, you know, also raising your husband's outside baby, now Googling about what to do after divorce. You know what I mean? Because that is some women's lives as well. And like, I mean, no joke, that was, you know, my great grandmother's life, quite frankly, but she didn't have a lot of options back then.
No, I think I really like that point you made. And I just hope there's some encouragement here for any younger women that might be listening. Listen to the older women, like, get out sooner. It doesn't typically get better when they show you their true colors like that. Take it for what it is the first time and save yourself and move on.
Yes, yes, indeedy.
So again, just to like the final section of the episode, I would like to know more about your dating experience once you, you know, had FDS and you got over the gaslighting from the church and the gaslighting from, you know, wider society that tells women if we divorce that we're failures, and what it was actually like when you decided to get back out there again.
Yeah, it took a little while to build up the courage. I realized I didn't really know how to date. So it was a skill I had to practice. I had to go on several bad first dates. I had to learn how to not get too attached too quickly. You know, I think there was still a layer of that internalized misogyny that I had to make it work with somebody. So the sooner the better. I didn't want to have to race with time. I realized, oh, I am in the driver's seat here, right? The world doesn't want to make you believe that. So once I really got into that mindset of like, oh, okay, I am in the driver's seat with this, you know, gosh, these men out here are just so thirsty. Like, it's crazy to me. So when I realized how much power I really had in this dating process, it really changed the game for me.
Mm-hmm. And that must have felt like such a shift from when you first started dating and during your first marriage as well.
Absolutely. It really was. I realized, okay, now I know what kind of characteristics a high value man has. And if you don't even have those initial basic things, I'm not giving you my time. My time is valuable. You know, access to me is so valuable. So you really have to be above par to get that. And, you know, they keep saying the bar is in hell all the time. And it's like, well, I have to raise it for myself. Like, sorry, dude, you know, you want me to go 50-50 on this? Sorry. Like, there's another guy who's not going to make me do that.
Bing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, did you ever disclose your past relationship to the men that you were dating?
Not initially, no. I didn't want to be judged by that. I really wanted them to get to know me for me first, and then I would disclose it. But I also had to remind myself, like, well, if that's the reason they don't want to be with me, then they weren't for me anyway. So I let them get to know me a little bit first. I mean, not for like forever, but hey, let me vet you out initially first a little bit. So
yeah, any guy that would judge you for getting divorced after your ex-husband completely had another family on you is a piece of crap. Like, I feel like that's unequivocal.
Well, see, I'm glad you said that, Ro, because that's what you would think. But you know what these men, some have said? It's like, oh, well, I'm a bad picker, or what'd you do to make him step out on you? It still turned back on me like it's my fault. So that was actually a good screener, you know, a good vetting strategy for me. It's like, oh, if you think that way, then we're not a match.
That's pretty insane.
Oh, I wish I could say it didn't happen, but it happened quite a bit.
The thing is, nothing that they do surprises me. I just like, I'm always, again, I'm surprised, but not surprised, but surprised. Like, yeah, one of the guys is like, oh, what did you do to make him go like have an entire other child? Like, I don't know. Like, you know, I obviously didn't condone or know they was doing any of that stuff. So that's crazy. That's just crazy.
It really is. You know, I will say the freedom of not having him in my life has just improved the overall quality of my life. Not even just with dating again, but even personally and professionally, I've been able to level up in many ways. And that's helped me in dating, right? You know, I had to be that high value woman myself. I had to do a lot of work to get there. So I'm really glad I was given that opportunity to do so, so I can be where I'm at now.
And that's really, really amazing to hear that, Kristen. And we're glad that FDS could be part of your level up journey. And so I just want to touch on something finally before we light the FDS barbecue for your ex-husband. In that you mentioned at towards the top of the episode about child development, and that's the field that you work in. So we have several FDS members who have children. In your professional opinion, what would you say is, I guess, the best way to, I guess, I'm more directing this towards the members who are perhaps raising sons? And also you can give advice for the women who are also raising daughters as well. But basically, what is the best way to raise children from a child development point of view so that, you know, relationships between men and women are more equitable in the future?
I think that's a great question. And my biggest piece of advice for parents to remember is, you know, if even if they are going to school and they have teachers, that the parents are the first teachers, and whatever you see in the home is actually going to stick with that child much longer than whatever they're exposed to at school, right? Home is their, you know, education that's going to stick with them, the things that happen in the home. So if you are not modeling those types of behaviors and expectations in your home, they're likely not just going to magically learn it by the time they're 18, right? So if you have those kinds of expectations and wants and desires for your child, you have to model it at home.
Thank you so much for that insight, Kristen. That's really, really good advice. And I do feel sometimes like there is a lot of pressure on teachers to almost be everything to students, I guess, partly because parents are so stretched now in today's economy and society. But ultimately, yeah, and we also, that sort of ties into a bit into our episode on the pop psychology behind attachment theory. Not so much attachment theory itself, but, you know, more the fact that the environment that children grow up in is just so important for their general development in life.
It really is. And I'll just throw this in there. So post getting my graduate degree, I started working as a diagnostician. So my specialty now is actually diagnosing different disabilities in children.
Oh, wow.
So I work mostly with things like autism disorder or dyslexia, other learning disabilities and emotional disturbances and things like that. I will say I see so often with parents, the dynamic between mom and dad is just so different. And I just, not to scare anyone, but, you know, having a child with a disability is just always on the table, right? It's not something you can control. And so it is so important to really vet out these men to make sure you have a good partner, because you don't know what kind of needs your child may have. And it is so hard, you know, single mom, single dad or not, it's challenging. And so you have to have that support system. And so often I just see it fall so much on mom, and dad can be the macho type that doesn't want to admit that something's wrong with their kid. So please, ladies, like, vet out these guys if you want to have children, and make sure they're actually going to be a dad that's supportive of no matter what the needs of that child are.
I think that's so, so important. And yeah, you're right. I think that when people think about having children, it's assumed that everything will be okay. And when statistically, as my surgeon once said, like, you know, someone has to draw the short straw in life when it comes to things like disabilities, and it could be you as well. So I think that's a really, really important conversation to have early on. And also to observe what the guy says as well, because a lot of guys will say, yeah, I'll be there, I'll be a great dad. But in reality, that just doesn't happen. you know, but there are ways to vet for, I think that could possibly be a future episode, but there are better ways to vet for whether a guy could or would be a suitable parent.
Yes.
So, right, I think if that's everything, we are now on to the barbecue.
Okay.
That lighting. So Kristen's ex on the FGS barbecue. So did they have the baby, by the way?
They did, and she had two other kids from another baby daddy that she wasn't married to. So he went from 0 to 3 very quickly.
Oh, that's going to stretch the budget.
Yeah.
Besides that, though, can you think of any other scroty story to share?
I'm sure I have plenty. Just one comment to throw out there, if you guys want to get a mental picture of the ick, he liked to wear cargo shorts with flip-flops. Oh, I'm just throwing that out there, ladies. Like, just run. Run. Run.
That's such an American image I have, and it's just not a good one.
Yeah. We had two dogs at the time, and he actually tried to take the dogs from the divorce and the divorce papers, but not both of them, only one of them. He wanted to take the boy dog and leave me the girl dog. So I was like, on what?
Oh my gosh.
He really didn't make any sense. It's baffling to me.
What an absolute loser.
I know. I know.
Just, yeah, I think the cargo shorts and flip-flops, I don't know about you, Ro, but that just said it all for me. And the mental image I have of him right now is not a good one.
Oh, yeah.
I just find that when the men I've seen, when they wear cargo shorts, they don't fit properly. And, like, men's bodies are not the most... I'm trying to be diplomatic in how I say this. I don't really know why, because men are never diplomatic when they're tearing women to shreds. But it's just, like, it basically exposes too much of their backside. Because it just doesn't fit properly.
Right? He criticized my appearance, though. Like, he would try to get me to look or dress a certain way. And I'm like, look at you, dude. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, that was why I was trying to be diplomatic. Because it's just not a nice mental image. And their crusty feet hanging out as well in flip-flop. I do think we need to normalize just calling men out on their looks and poor sense of fashion. Because I don't know where half of them get the brass neck from. But unless they dress like they have like tailored outfits and there's no plumber's crack and they actually look like something out of and they look like something out of the 365 DNI, even though the movie was shit, but the men dressed well, they can shut the fuck up about appearances. And even if they do dress like that, they can still shut the fuck up because they shouldn't be commenting on women's appearance in a negative way. But at least I'll give them a bit more leeway to speak if they come correct themselves, if that makes sense. Especially the way men talk about women's looks. It's like nobody's ever pulled a mirror out on you and just read you for filth. That's the reason why you have this misplaced confidence.
Agreed. Also, one last little roast, if you'd like, before we wrap up. While I first started going back to grad school, he almost got this tinge of like jealousy that I was going to be more educated than him. So then all of a sudden he needed to enroll in grad school also. And yeah, but then get this. He didn't finish, and now I am a professor at the university that he didn't finish from, so.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. What a loser. Gosh, what a loser. You are well rid. And I imagine school's expensive in the US, so he literally enrolled in school just to be able to stick it to you. He couldn't even do that.
Yeah, no, he couldn't handle that, so. God forbid his wife is educated and has career prospects.
Yeah, I'll say a silent prayer for her because, boy, that doesn't sound like a good person to be shacked up with.
You know, she probably thinks that she found a good one. So,
but thank you so much, Kristen, for sharing your story with us today. It's been really, really insightful and funny.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yes, I really appreciate everything that you guys do for women all over. It's so wonderful having this female space, and I owe you guys a lot for the growth and things I've been able to do. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks so much. That's our show. Check us out on thefemaledatingstrategy.com if you want to discuss this episode. Also check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/thefemaledatingstrategy. On X, which I think only Savannah's still on there right now because I've just abandoned that dumpster fire.
Oh gosh, the app is blackpilling me by the second. Oh
yeah. Or on Instagram @_thefemaledatingstrategy. Thanks for listening, queens.
You'll find a man that doesn't wear cargo shorts and flip-flops, ladies.
Bye, guys.
Bangity bang.
Yes.
Die mad. See y'all next week.